Life Show. Yes to Life's the UK's integrative cancer care charity, helping people with cancer across the UK to look at their situation in the broadest possible way, a no stone unturned approach. In a few days, on the 21st of April, I'm excited to say the new book being sold in aid of Yes to Life, The Cancer Revolution, is to be launched. The book's been written by integrative medicine expert Patricia Peat of Cancer Options and 37 other experts from the UK and around the world, who have all contributed to the book absolutely free in order to maximise the benefit to the charity, Yes to Life. I'd like to read you a paragraph off the back of the book to introduce you to it. The Cancer Revolution has been written to introduce the public to a revolutionary way of looking at cancer, integrative medicine. An alarmingly high and relentlessly growing number of people are being affected, either directly or indirectly, by this deadly disease. They do not have the luxury of waiting for science to come up with the cure. They need answers right now. The Cancer Revolution has answers. It's packed with strategies to improve your prospects and your quality of life. So the Cancer Revolution extends to over 300 pages. But this is not another of those cancer Bibles, a daunting tome full of complex material. The aim in creating the book was to make its content as accessible as possible and to present information in ways whereby the reader can find relevant material quickly. Each chapter or section is presented by an experienced practitioner or scientist, and once the introductory material on integrative medicine and using the book have been covered, can be read in isolation as and when needed. Add to this a massive 40 pages of resources, QR codes in the margins to link your smartphone direct to relevant material on the internet, and a unique system of therapeutic target icons to quickly identify strategies to achieve your health targets, and you have a massive and empowering resource for anyone with an interest in avoiding cancer, anyone with cancer, or anyone who has had cancer. As I mentioned, The Cancer Revolution is due for publication on the 21st of April. I'll give full details of obtaining a copy for yourself at the end of the show. Today's show is a continuation of the series of shows I've been running about the Cancer Revolution and featuring some of the many experts who have made the project possible by giving their contributions freely. This week I'm going to be featuring Daphne Lambert. Daphne is a nutritionist and a chef with long experience of supporting people with cancer using food. Her chapter in the book is entitled Diet as the Foundation of Good Health, and it covers a wide range of important topics relating to food, cooking, health, and in particular cancer. I'm speaking to Daphne over Skype at her home in Sussex. Hi Daphne, thanks so much for coming on the show, and I'm really delighted that you're one of the contributors to the Cancer Revolution. Your chapter is fantastic, Diet as a Foundation of Good Health. So, and thanks very much for coming on today to talk about it.
It's a pleasure, Robin.
All right, so I wanted to start out by asking a bit about your own personal experience. What led you to take an interest in nutrition in the first place? And then maybe you can tell us a bit about where this has led you, and in particular, the ways that this has led you to interface with people with cancer along the way.
Well, I've been a chef for over 40 years, and as a chef, I had a restaurant. And I think having a restaurant shows you the real responsibility you have to producing food that is nourishing. And that was the start, along with a piece of land. And so there was the connection between soil, healthy food, and healthy people. And so that was the germ at the beginning. And then I studied nutrition over 25 years ago. And ever since then, it's just been, you know, I've researched and studied and worked as a nutritionist, but I've based my understanding that healing the individual and the planet are interconnected. And the more we destroy the planet, the more we destroy ourselves. And in a sense, I don't call myself a therapist, more a teacher. So I teach the traditional ways of preparing and growing and preparing our food, all of which have a healing benefit.
Okay, so maybe you tell us a little bit then. You, as you say, you had your restaurant, and I actually visited your restaurant and very much enjoyed it, I can remember. And you did quite, as you say, quite a lot of teaching there as well. Maybe you could say a bit about exactly what you're trying to convey to people and the kind of people who are attracted to what you were trying to say.
Well, I was teaching the connection between the food we eat and our health. And that can come across in many different ways, in many different courses. But that was fundamental to, you know, the connection between the two. But when I finished that retreat centre, I started an educational charity. So now I run a charity that teaches the connection between food and health. And the very interesting thing, I did start at the beginning wanting to work with people to have health, vitality and vibrant lives. But more and more people were coming to me who had health issues that they wanted to correct, really. So it was quite a shift from when I eventually, you know, originally started, how I wanted to work with people. And it was just very interesting, the number of people that I started interacting with who had had cancer or who had been touched by cancer in some way, because it does touch us all. And specifically, I was working with women with cancer who came to look at a new way of eating so that it didn't recur.
So it was more the people who are coming to you that directed you in this way than your own original intention, in a way. You were actually trying to make everyday people have an even better life, but actually it was people in need who sought you out, so to speak. Okay, so did this direct then your research, your actual learning for yourself, you know, when it came to the relationship between food and cancer particularly?
Well, it did to a certain extent, in the sense that, you know, I looked at certain areas a lot more, you know, like oxygen, like acid alkaline balance, like the vegetarian diet. But, you know, it doesn't matter how you look at all those different aspects of food. Ultimately, they are the healthy diet.
Right.
So although you can be, I think, you know, if you are in healthy balance, you can actually have some foods that I wouldn't say were necessarily the best foods for a cancer diet, because you have a strong system that is able to digest them or work with them. Ultimately, you know, it doesn't matter what I look at, it is one diet that is the right diet. You know, it's the diet that actually is grown in the right way, processed in the right way, and eaten in the right way, so that you have all those different elements.
Right, good. Okay, well, let's just go through a little bit. I like those three categories you've just given there, three stages. Can we just go through them in a bit more detail? What's your idea of grown in the right way?
Well, growing, I think, you know, my bottom line actually is organic. And so grown naturally, you know, the way that we have evolved in the last 60 years to grow our food is not natural. And there is enough research now that shows that, you know, organic food has got far more beneficial compounds like vitamins, minerals, omega-3 and antioxidants than non-organic foods. So Professor Carlo Liefert from Newcastle University has absolutely made it clear with his studies. So I think that some of the beneficial compounds like the antioxidants or the phytonutrients are actually key to our health. And it makes sense, really, that, you know, just without any science, it makes absolute sense that these organically grown foods would be higher in phytonutrients, simply because it is the plant's strategy to protect itself from radiation and, pests and fungi. It is the strategy of the plant to protect itself. And then when we eat the plant, we take on those beneficial compounds. If you're constantly spraying these plants with pesticides and herbicides, it takes away their ability to do it. They don't need to do it because there's something being done for them. So
I think
the phytonutrients are really important.
And so I was just going to say that's apart from the the negatives of adding in the chemicals, of course.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's another whole... you know, right. it just compounded and compounded. So to me, organic food is absolutely right.
Mm.
And it's also the, you know, environmental destruction. So, you know, you run off into water, water becomes not good for you. You know, it's endless. It's absolutely endless.
Mm. But
what I've focused on mostly is the benefits of these phytonutrients. And, you know, if you look at the plants that are most healing, it's the plants that are, you know, the vibrantly coloured plant life, which is actually gets its colour from, you know, incredibly beneficial compounds that are phytonutrients.
Mm. Okay, so that's the bottom line for greying. Now, yes. The next category you get said was processed, which is a sort of a dirty word in food. But anyway, what do you mean by processed?
Well, you see, that's really, really interesting, isn't it? Language is such an interesting thing because, you know, actually, I would define it that you can have good process and bad process.
Quite.
So, in a sense, you know, some of the key foods that I work with, like might be sprouting or it might be fermenting, they are actually processes, aren't they?
Right, yes.
You know, so I suppose there's artisan traditional processing, and there's modern technology processing. And I think what we've done with many foods is forgotten how we traditionally process them. So, you know, soaking grains, sprouting seeds, fermenting foods, all makes nutrients more bioavailable, all are much better on the digestive system, so support the immune system. And all are better for the gut. So, you know,
so
that's what I look at, those sort of foods. Or eating, that's what I look at.
Yeah, so those are definitely beneficial processes then, particularly if you're a bit ill and your absorption is poor or, you know, you simply can't eat that much. It's those things are definitely are working in your favour.
But it's also very much in there is that whole thing around quality over quantity.
Okay.
You know, if we create foods that are nutrient dense, actually we don't need so much food and there's more food to go around, but actually we are giving the body what it needs. And you're quite right, you know, when people are faced with a poor appetite, better to give them something small and really nutrient dense to you know, help the healing process.
Mm. Okay, and the last category was, you know, eating. What's good eating look like to you?
Good question. I think it's the way we receive food is really important. And I think taking time out and sitting down and creating a space ready to receive our food and also to share our food together around the table is a really important element. So I think it brings in that really important emotional and spiritual part of eating food, because actually what you're doing is taking something into your body that is going to become you. I mean, that's quite something, isn't it?
It is.
And it's the idea that people walk around eating something out of a packet now is so degrading what food is.
Mm.
So I actually think how you eat is important. And of course, also the way you eat, you know, if you eat in, you know, there's the whole thing about eating in anger or when you're upset, you know, when you're in grief, actually your body shuts down to protect itself, doesn't it? You can't eat.
Yeah.
It's all those sort of things I would say were important about how you eat.
Mm. Okay, great. So starting something like a century ago with Max Gerson, there have been literally dozens of protocols developed specifically to help people with cancer. And in your chapter, you outlined three of them very briefly, including the Gerson therapy.
Mm.
And the thing about these different systems or protocols is that they're often very contradictory in their various do's and don'ts. And yet they can still be helpful to at least some people, despite the differences. So if you managed to kind of extract some general truths from this that might constitute good advice to anyone with cancer?
Yes.
So maybe you could let us have a few of those.
So I think where we started around natural food is also the base of it. So eating natural foods, grown in a natural system. I think the looking at avoiding meat, dairy is an important part of healing cancer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily tell people not to eat meat, you know, when they're just looking for a healthy diet, though I think the whole thing around meat needs sort of probably unpicking, but it's, you know, it was not necessarily what I'd say. But I would tell people to avoid acidic food, and meat is an acidic food. So is coffee, so are carbonated drinks, alcohol. And so what we're looking at is creating and flooding the system with as many alkaline-forming foods as possible and as many foods high in oxygen. So those are the foods that I would say would be associated with good health. Those would be the key things, actually, to look at oxygen, high oxygen foods, alkaline foods, minimizing your intake of anything from animal origin or stopping completely, and eating predominantly a plant-based diet.
In the most natural state.
Yes.
So that would be the kind of overall package that whatever you choose to do, you would advise people to keep within those boundaries, if you like.
Yes.
Okay. And if you're supporting someone with cancer, are there other more specific things that you particularly favour? You know, particular types of foods or particular individual foods that you think are absolutely great for people with cancer?
I would look at the individual. I would really look at the individual. I would say what I've already said, but in addition, I would probably look at foods that support the gut. So I think a compromised gut is going to give, it's obviously going to give a compromised immune system, and obviously want the strength of your immune system. So I think it is the bacteria in your gut, you know, that direct the immune defences throughout your body. And these microbes are also incredibly important to make, to extract certain nutrients from the food, like vitamin K, B12, all the Bs, in fact. And without them, you cannot ever derive the full nourishment that you need. So I would always look to strengthening the gut. And I do believe that fermented foods are incredibly beneficial. So I would, but what you're looking for is a lactic fermented foods, because obviously there's different sorts of fermented foods. We're not looking at alcoholic fermented.
Right.
Yeah. So
right.
I would look at the lactic fermented foods, because specifically they have both prebiotic and probiotic bacteria, which I think is really important.
So examples of which you would be what? The best examples?
So I think, well, you can ferment any vegetable on any basic principle, like a sauerkraut, but you can use the same principle that you make a sauerkraut with any vegetable. And in fact, you know, when we're looking at what we've done to our food chain, all the original foods would have been fermented. So now you look at something like tomato ketchup, for example,
yeah.
The original tomato sauces would have been fermented.
Oh, really?
When you look at a chili sauce, the original chili would have been fermented. When you look at pickles that are just submerged in vinegar, they wouldn't have been done like that. They'd have been fermented. And all the original porridges would have been fermented, because grain being specifically hard for us to digest. So it's learning how to treat the so that you extract the most nutrients, and it's the most gentle on the digestive, especially when you've got a compromised digestive system. And most people have, when they've got some sort of illness, they've got a compromised digestive system. It all seems to start there.
All right. You go into this in your chapter, but can we speak a bit now about the relative merits of these different types of diet that are, you know, you've got the vegetarian, the vegan, and raw food diets as well. All these things are heralded as great ideas by different people for supporting people with cancer. Can you tell us a bit about your thoughts?
From my perspective, I would base a diet on vegan for a whole number of reasons. However, I am open when working with somebody to look at where they're coming from. There are, I would absolutely take refined sugar and other simple sugars out of a diet because they interfere with the immune system and they support depletion of key nutrients in the diet. So sugar is sort of non-negotiable with me.
Okay.
But, you know, looking around vegan and vegetarian, you know, potentially an egg that feel like someone, you know, looking at where they're going to get their protein from. Some people might find it harder to digest legumes. Some people might find it harder to extract the nutrients they want from plant than animal. I would look very, very carefully at it, but my general opinion is that, and there's enough evidence to support it, that a vegetarian or vegan diet is the better diet to support healing.
Okay, and what's what about raw. Raw versus cooked?
Well, I think that's an interesting one too. In my experience, because I know people come out really strongly in favour of raw, but in my experience, some people's energy within themselves is very depleted and they are unable to digest raw. So there are times when I think what would be more beneficial is some warming soups, something like miso or a vegetable soup, and slowly build up their strength and slowly add more and more raw, because I do see the benefits of raw, but I also know that for some people it is hard to digest.
Yeah, intuitively warm food feels very supportive, doesn't it, actually? And and of course, cooking is another of those processes you were talking about earlier on. It's, and it could have beneficial, you know, bring benefits to the food in terms of preparing it for your gut in some way and breaking it down a bit.
Possibly, but it's taken away, you know, I think you could argue, you know, many foods, you could argue both ways.
Right.
You know, it might have produced something that's a benefit, but at the same time, it's probably lost other things that were a benefit. You know, you'll have lost all of the enzymes, for example, from cooking it.
Yes.
So it sort of depends how you, what you do. So I, for example, it's what I would think would be a very nourishing food. Say if we made a warm soup, a hot soup actually, and then on the top, when it was served, you put a big spoonful of fermented vegetables. Then you're, you know, then you're sort of combining the two and moving along until the digestive system is a bit better to be able to cope with taking in foods that you know have got more nutrients in the way of raw. And I think actually to incorporate raw as smoothies is better. I mean, I think it's quite hard for somebody to be faced with just a plate of vegetables or sprouted seeds, you know, when actually you just need some deep nourishment on all levels, which is being looked after. And as you say, with some sort of warming vegetables, I think is the beginning ground. And I also know that I've worked with biodynamic nutritionists who say the energy that's in a biodynamic plant, which is their experience with being biodynamic nutritionists, is sometimes just the vibrational energy is too hard for people to digest until they're stronger. So that's a very interesting element as well.
Right. So yeah, I think you're right. There's a sort of cultural thing around food and cooking, isn't there? Which is, you know, there's a lot of, you give somebody a plate of chopped up carrots and there's, you know, there's not so much gone into that. And it also, it doesn't send out the same kind of messages that somebody who's put a lot of effort into preparing food, it very often looks fantastic and it smells fantastic and is part of the appeal, if you like, that gives you the appetite to want to consume it.
And I think, you know, for people who have got impaired appetite, don't have a big appetite, actually to engage them, engage in all the senses to increase the appetite is really important.
Yes.
You know, so I absolutely agree, you know, you know, smell's got to be really good, you know, taste's got to be really good. And if you can't give them a completely alien taste, you know, you've got to work slowly towards it.
Yes. And, yeah, I think that that's an important message, if you like, about change, is that if you try and make too much change at once, you'll probably give up and or fail in some ways. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I do. I think, yeah, I think complete change can be overwhelming at a time when you don't need extra overwhelm.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And now you mentioned the word biodynamic. Not everybody would be familiar with that, what it means. Can you just say a little bit about it and what you think about it?
Yeah, biodynamic is a form of farming that was developed from Rudolf Steiner, and it brings in the cosmos as well as just the planet Earth. And so it would do a certain amount of planting in line with the rhythms of the moon, and which again makes sense if you think about the power of the moon and the tides. Therefore, the power of the moon would also affect the sap in plants.
Mm-hmm.
So it has that element to it as well. But what it has, which is really important in terms of balance, it has a closed farm system so that you never keep more than what can be supported by what you grow on the farm. So if you have, for example, chickens, or if you had sheep or cattle, you could only have a herd or a flock the size that your farm can support.
All right.
Which means we only, this is then comes down to a proportion that's right. We only have a small amount of animals that are fed with a natural diet and live in a natural way in a small environment, because it's actually the way we grow food now that has given permission for us to have all these horrendous chicken sheds and cattle sheds and things, which is, you know, so actually the cattle are ill.
Yeah.
And people that eat that food are going to be ill.
Right. Okay. So anyway, you like biodynamics?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and so if you had an option to buy biodynamic food, that would be an even better choice than organic, maybe?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. So maybe you write quite a bit in the chapter about water, and you mentioned that already in the show. So can you talk a little bit about water, why it's important, what we're looking for in water, and what we can do to ensure that our water is as good as possible?
So I suppose very few of us have access to natural water. So I've been talking about natural farming. We can have access to food grown in a natural system, but natural water that you know, comes from a spring and tumbles and falls through vortexes and creates energy and is exposed to the energy of the sun and then comes down is a highly structured water that is full of minerals and oxygen and energy and vitality. And we simply don't have access to that water because our water is, you know, goes through modern water treatments, uses chemicals, and is transported in straight pressurized pipes that sort of don't allow any of that natural movement to happen. So we don't drink a highly health promoting water. So that's it. Tap water is unlikely to have those benefits.
Right.
So chlorine in water affects the metabolism of fat and hormonal activity. And it's really what are you going to do with your water to make sure that you've got no impurities left in it. But even then, you don't have this incredibly vibrant water, which is the natural water. So I do find water is a difficult subject. Some people would say you can use a filter, and carbon filters remove a fair amount, but not everything. Some people suggest you distill water. I don't think distilled water is a long-term good choice because it tends to leach minerals out of the body. So it is a perplexing problem. It's one of the key things of Rudolf Steiner and biodynamic agriculture, that they introduced into the water they used a vortex. And the vortex was done by stirring and stirring the water or by actually creating a spiral movement through a design known as a free form. And then the vortex absorbed back into the water a vibrant living energy. And that's what he used on a biodynamic farm, which is very interesting because that was a long time ago that they were starting realizing that this water wasn't beneficial. But you're asking me what people really should do. So I definitely think you shouldn't buy water in a plastic bottle.
Right. Would I just say why? Yeah,
because leaving aside the fact that, you know, landfill is a major problem, leaving aside those issues, the molecules of the plastic will leach into the water, and that's cause detrimental effects. And also the water will not only have it will also assimilate some of the water of the packaging information. So it's unhealthy chemicals, and you absolutely don't want those. And it's just water that's been sat around. What you can get, which I think is really brilliant, you can get now this small little attachment that you put onto your pipes, which starts turning the water in a vortex again. So when it comes out of your tap, it's naturally in a vortex. Or you can collect water in a tap and let it sit so any chlorine disperses. And you can put a vortex on the jug. So when you pour your water out, it's coming more energized again. And the more energized the water is, the more hydrated you will become from drinking it.
So that's interesting. So just by actually leaving the water to stand, it actually reduces the chlorine content through evaporation. Okay, good to know. Another thing that you actually devote quite a lot of attention to in the chapter is about cooking utensils, how you cook, what you actually use. So actually you give a lot of detail about it, but maybe we can at least do some of the sort of top line messages here.
So, yes, exactly in the same way as with plastic bottles of water and the potential of slurring off of molecules that can be harmful, Teflon too, you know, if heated to a certain temperature, will break down into chemicals which are incredibly harmful and being linked to cancer. So I just don't think you should use nonstick pans at all. And actually, a cast iron pan is much better with proper seasoning, and it won't stick to the surface. I've had my pans for 30 years and I never washed them, and they just wiped out at the time and they never stick. So I wouldn't go anywhere near Teflon or any of the modern things. Why can't we just use traditional pots and pans? Aluminium I wouldn't use either because of its connections to you know, various diseases, especially Alzheimer's. So, you know, people are endlessly bringing out new ideas of what you can have, but I would sort of stick to just traditional, either cast iron or stainless steel.
Stainless steel, all right. And there's, of course, there's lots of different ways in which you can cook food, some of which would I'm sure you would approve of more than others.
Well, I would be very, very cautious on how you cooked with fats. So I think actually fats along with sugar are one of the key areas I would look at in anybody's diet and eliminate any fat that is harmful. So I would only have good fat and I wouldn't heat them. If I was going to cook with a little bit of olive oil, for example, I would add water. So I'd be half olive oil, half water. So the water protects the olive oil getting too hot and destroying the compounds in it. So I would be very, very careful how I cooked with fats. Generally, I think adding fats to your diet as cold pressed oils is beneficial, but cooking with them, I think, can be harmful. I think cooking soups and using everything in the pot, blending it up so that you haven't, you know, lost anything, I think that's good to start with. I'd be quite minimal in my approach to cooking and quite low heat.
How about sort of baking, grilling, things like that?
Well, I wouldn't grill. And I wouldn't ever allow my food to go brown. That's the key thing of it. You know, once upon a time, all recipes said, you know, heat your oil and, you know, then put in your food and cook till it's brown. But actually, then you are turning your food in, you know, as a carcinogenic. So I would be really wary about turning anything brown. So if you were going to grill something, you know, I wouldn't grill it and make it brown. So, but baking, you know, maybe a little bit for some people of, you know, a rye bread would be quite good. You'd have to bake the rye bread first. So, yeah, right. There's a place for it. There's no place in the kitchen for microwaves.
I was going to ask about them.
I think that is well known how it... Well, I don't know whether it is well known, actually, because we still bloody buy the things.
So absolutely. Come on, tell us exactly why we don't want microwaves. I haven't got one and I don't want one. So let's be clear.
It's not a natural way of heating food. And, you know, for a very long time, on the research that came out of Russia, there's endless evidence to support that microwave food creates formations which are very difficult to digest. And it's absolutely dead food. There's no doubt about that. If we're looking at food that's going to enliven the system, then eating microwave food is not going to do that. So it, I mean, there was research done in Switzerland that showed that people who ate microwave food had a decrease in the blood level of hemoglobin, and that's what carries the oxygen, and that oxygen is so important for cancer. So I can't see any reason for having microwave. I think it's significantly detrimental to your health.
Right. Okay. Well, look, we covered a lot there. Is there anything that... I haven't asked you.
I think it's really important to create a diet that people find joyful, actually.
Right.
You know, if you are creating something that is too difficult to eat, then you're not going to digest it properly. There are some fantastic recipes that you can create out of plants, and that's what I really want to inspire people to do, is to eat a colourful array of plants prepared in a way that they are happy to receive.
I see.
It could be too difficult for people, basically, and I'm sure you'd agree with that.
Absolutely, because there's enough difficulties as it is when you're that ill. Mm. Yeah, so this should be, if you like, one of the peak moments of enjoyment in amongst some of the more difficult things that you have to encounter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's very important too. Okay, that's great. So I understand you're working on a new book, or you maybe you've even finished your new book. Maybe you could tell us what it is, what it's about.
Yes, I am. It's actually on its way to the printers, and the first edition will be out in June.
Great.
And it's called Living Food, A Feast for Soil and Soul.
Right.
And it's a journey both through life, conception, birth, family, community, eldership, and a journey through the seasons, and looking at how the seasons and the soil provides the right food at the right time of year to support our journey.
Mm. So a good foundation for anyone's health, but also, of course, of interest to people with cancer.
Yes, and one of the elements that I guess we hadn't quite spoken about, it's very easy for people to be given a diet to eat that's going to help their journey, but actually not all foods are in season all year. So you could make different smoothies, for example, with seasonal ingredients. It's not just one smoothie that's going to be, you know, all right, spring, summer, autumn, winter. So through the book, I give four smoothies or four cancer-fighting drinks. You know, do you know what I mean? It's just like, it's that, all that does is perpetuate the problem of trying to find something. It's stressful, or it's perpetuating that constant problem of sourcing the globe for something. Where I am in Lewis, I do healing retreats, working with individuals who want to change their diet and are overwhelmed by how they should do this. And so the 3 days centres around eating and drinking nourishing foods and showing people actually how to make them. Being told just to change your diet for some people is completely overwhelming, because many of our eating habits are deeply embedded.
Yeah.
And so... this is 3 days of support of completely being immersed in a new food culture.
Great. Well, we'll make sure that details of that are shared on our website. All right. Well, look, fantastic. That's brilliant. Thank you again so much for your chapter. It's one of the great ones in the book, which I hope people are going to love. You know, thanks for sharing some of your accumulated years of wisdom today with everybody.
Thank you.
I imagine many of you listening will be interested in Daphne's new book that she mentioned, Living Food, A Feast for Soil and Soul, and also some of her previous titles that cover some of the material discussed today. For example, Little Red Gooseberries, a book of organic recipes. Details of these, along with the 3-day course and all the other resources mentioned in the show are available on the Yes to Life website. Just go to yestolife.org.uk, click Media Centre in the left-hand sidebar, and then choose UK Health Radio. Please do sign up at thecancerrevolution.co.uk, where the book will be available for sale shortly. You'll also be able to buy it in all major bookstores and from Amazon, where it is available for pre-order. You can find The Cancer Revolution, Yes to Life, and me, Robin Daly, on Facebook if you want to comment on anything in the show, as well as on Twitter, at CancerRev, at Yes to Life, and at RMK_Daly. Next week, I continue my journey speaking to contributors to The Cancer Revolution, so I hope you'll be able to listen again. Goodbye.